Howdy, folks. This is Ted Lasso, your favorite optimistic American football coach turned English football coach. And welcome to The Richmond Way, a Ted Lasso Rewatch podcast. So grab your biscuits, put on your AFC Richmond scarf, and let's embark on this journey together.
Everybody, welcome to the Richmond Way podcast. My name is Bonnie, and with me we have Mark and Mike. But you guys can, yeah, you can talk about yourselves. I just wanted to say your names because you're lovely.
My name's so Mike. Unoriginal.
His name's Mark. I mean, wait, what?
Strike that. Reverse it.
Strike that. Flip that. Reverse
it. Yeah. Pulling a, yep.
Yeah. Yep.
That's
us.
That's us.
Just have some biscuits with the boss.
Biscuits with the boss. And what do you have, Mark, right there? What is that? Can you share that with us? What is that over there?
Well, just in case you don't know what it is, for people watching with video, they very clearly made sure that everybody would that didn't... I mean, so this is going to be a really quick rant. Like, this is the stuff I don't like about... Like,
is it going to be, though?
Yeah, like, when they do tie-in, like, products for stuff, if someone is going to get it, they already know what it's from. So it should rather just be like a, if you know, you know kind of thing. Rather than like make it look like it's in universe. Don't like it's like, don't like, you don't have to write Riscus with the boss over it. You don't have to put the Ted Lasso logo on it. And you don't have to put a quote on the inside of the box too.
Make it in universe, he says.
Yeah.
Just like, give us the pink box and give us the biscuits. It's all the people want.
Yeah,
that's all like Mark wants.
One of the first Ted Lasso shirts I got was like, it had the AFC Richmond logo on it, but then it said Ted Lasso beneath it. I was like, I know it's from Ted Lasso. Put it like on the tag on the inside. If someone knows it's from Ted Lasso, they're gonna know it's from Ted Lasso. You don't need to put Ted Lasso under the AFC Richmond logo too. It's like, I don't know. I just prefer like the merch for stuff that looks like it's something like Ted bought in the show or whatever other character bought in whatever other show. Like if you bought a Mouse Rat shirt, it's not, you shouldn't say Parks and Recreation in the Mouse Rat logo. Because if you bought a Mouse Rat shirt from Andy Dwyer, it's not going to say Parks and Recreation underneath the Mouse Rat logo. But anyways, we're here to talk about Ted Lasso.
That's, but you know, if there's anybody from any marketing departments that also handle merchandise, maybe that's a good note. Maybe it's a licensing thing where they have to put that.
Maybe.
I don't know. I am wearing a not Ted Lasso related thing. It just says Sunnydale. It says nothing about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It's, well, it's, but if you know, you know.
Yeah. But it's tangentially connected to Ted Lasso.
You know.
By
Rupert.
A character that has not shown up yet. Well, in photo in form, pictures. Yet.
Pictures. In photo form, but not in person.
Same actor and same name, but not yet to have shown up in the flesh on the show yet.
Well, maybe when we get to that, we can do some sort of Ted Lasso and Buffy crossover episode and talk about that. That would be fun.
I'd have to watch Buffy. I've never seen it.
Me too.
Well, I highly recommend that you do. Well, but
I take that back. I've seen the movie that spurred the TV show.
Oh, with Paul Reubens? Yeah.
Yes.
The movie's great. The show is different, but still very good. But I love the movie. But we're here to talk about something else that starts with a B. Biscuits. Biscuits with the boss. So this is the second episode of season one. So we're still, you know, starting off relatively...
feeling it out.
Yeah. We're still seeing who's who, what's going on. But it is starting to build. So I know we each had our thoughts on it. Do we want to go in order of the episode? Do we want to talk about some of the plot notes and then go through that way?
Well, I'll share some really quick here up the front, like, before we get into, like, the actual episode itself, other than... It was directed by Zach Braff, who's worked with, you know, Bill Lawrence on Scrubs. You know, directed a bunch of his own feature films. So I always liked that he directed one. I believe he directed one other one, but don't quote me on that. But I do know he obviously at least directed this episode. And I don't know if you can really tell that Zach Braff directed it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I thought it was a well-directed episode. So I think it's like a cool little bit of trivia for people that, that may not have known that.
I think it's just that episode.
I'm sorry.
I can't say you can tell he directed it.
Yeah, I mean, sure. He doesn't have like a very distinct, like, it's not like, you know, like how Kevin Smith has like a style or Tarantino has a style or Spielberg or whatnot. It's like
he may have one that we just don't notice.
Yeah, it's his, not style, like it's Zach Braff, his style,
beat, you know.
Yeah, it's more like his when he like writes and directs the stuff that he does more that way.
That's cool. I actually didn't know that until you said that. I missed that in the rewatch.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
But he got an Emmy nomination for directing this episode.
Nice.
There you go.
Because I looked it up. I want to see how many. It was just that one, apparently.
And now he's doing the same thing. T-Mobile commercials with Jason Momoa and Donald Faison.
My wife was wondering when we watched that commercial. She's like, is he wearing a prosthetic head or something? He doesn't look right. I was like, I don't know.
Although Jason Sudeikis was also in a commercial with Lionel Messi, too, which I was like, this is like Ted Lasso adjacent, I guess, because he's in a commercial with someone playing soccer, football.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting.
That was interesting. But Ted Lasso.
The Jamie like... Tart in American.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
More or less. Yeah, I guess. What did you guys... What did you guys like about like this episode as we got like further into like out of the pilot and like into this like more like flowing into the story now?
Well,
you go, Mike.
No, it was just, they're just starting to really, they gave us a brief foundation last week. This episode expounded on more of Ted and how he breaks people down than anybody else. We still have all the side characters we got touches on. Like, you still had a heavy Rebecca carryover, but Ted got more this week than he did last week, which was nice because the show is, he is the title character, so you get to learn why he is the way he is, kind of like how he breaks people, like his coaching style, which he's more like, again, he's more people, beards, more data, more readily apparent in here with all Ted learning the Britishisms and Beard just knowing, like, that's that dynamic, they just hit on it so quickly and move on. And it's done nicely, so that's always good. It felt quick, the episode. Like, there was no doubt in my mind that they weren't going to win the first game Ted coached. Like, I knew like that was going to be the outcome, so I'm glad they didn't waste time with game footage. It's just like, here's the kickoff, they lose.
Okay.
So I thought that was a smart decision.
That's like a kind of funny, like, joke within, like, the edit, too. It's like, oh, they're bound to do well today, and then cut straight to the end of the game. Mm-hmm. Which kind of becomes like a running thing in the show too, where like they'll do that, where like they'll cut, like it's they're going to out to play the game and then cut, and the game's over.
If you've ever watched football, it's not, as it's for us Americans, it's not the most exciting sport.
Yeah.
Not to say it's not exciting and people don't enjoy it, but the common theme in America is it's boring. We'll find that out later in season 3 when there's a, but plus it's not really about them playing yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not about the game. It's about everything else, I would say. Yeah. Like, we know what's happening. We don't need to see it because it's not super relevant to the story, weirdly enough. Well, I had a thought. Yeah, I know you have the biscuits with the boss. Do we want to share the recipe? Do we want to make them and share our results on our socials? I think that'd be fun. I have any excuse just to cook or bake something. I'm usually down. I'm not doing it tonight.
I wasn't
going to
make cupcakes tomorrow, so maybe I could do that instead.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to find
the
recipe.
I think that could be fun. Because I kind of want to know.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Confused about what?
I watch British Bake Off constantly, and those didn't look like biscuits to me.
Hmm.
But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Did either of you try the Jenny's ice cream?
No.
Biscuits with the boss?
I doubt
it. But
now
I want ice cream.
That was it was pretty good. See, they did the whole thing there too.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah. I've made them one time. And I followed one recipe, but I think since then they've released like an official recipe. Our friend Alice, who does the Ted Lasso Rocks too, she's friends with, I believe, I want to make sure that I get, we'll she has a friend. Post. Yeah, like, she has like a friend that makes the makes the biscuits, and like anytime she sends out the rocks to anybody like that, it's usually it'll be accompanied by some of the biscuits there with that. So, and I think those tasted really good. Mm-hmm. The ones that I made, I don't know how close they were to how they are on the show, but I don't know. When you guys got your rocks, you guys got biscuits with your two, did you? Mike? No. Oh, Mike didn't. I guess
I did.
But mine came from across the country, so I can imagine why she did not ship them with mine.
I think Bonnie, technically, if she wanted to, she could go to this bakery. So she could probably, you could probably go and just get the ones from her, because I know she had also made cookies, American cookies, not biscuits, for the season 3 rap show too. So, it's gonna bother me that I can't remember her name too. But once this episode gets posted, I'll put the link to her place in
we'll add it in the show notes.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
but. Have you guys ever made them before, prior to this, and tried them?
I have not, but I want to try it. Yeah.
Looking at today's show's official Ted Lasso biscuits, they're just sugar cookies. So.
Yeah, I mean they're more or less shortbread cookies, but definitely you put a little bit more salt in them. So I know eventually later in the show, Ted will accidentally have put too much salt rather than sugar in them, and they'll be kind of gross. And we also know from BL high in the scenes with Hannah Waddingham, she said in season 1 they were really gross. But then as
she acted the fuck out of them, so
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but as they got to season 3 they actually did taste good at that point, so she could actually genuinely say what she does when she bites into one.
Yeah, I put that in the notes. Oh, that's that was genuine. I want to try it. I want to kind of do it as a science experiment in a way. How did he do that with that busy schedule? How long did it take? And then to keep that up every single time. I'd be curious to see how long that would take, because I too have a busy schedule. It's not usually coaching a bunch of dudes, but once in a while. So I would be curious to see how long that took, and then, how much do you need to make all that? I don't know. I just think baker's brain. I think it would be interesting.
Yeah, and does he make a huge batch for the week? And
that later on.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
This time is he making them one day after the other, because he wasn't sure if she was gonna want them still,
and that's really gives her three or four, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's we see a box where he puts the queen bobblehead on there. It's a stack of five or so, I think. But
then how are you keeping them fresh and not going stale? See, there's a lot happening here. And I want to get to the bottom of it.
Willing suspension of disbelief.
Not when it comes to cooking.
That's not the craziest thing that's happening on the show.
Well, no, that's something my brain picked up on.
It shows later on, I don't know if it's season 1 or not, when he offers him spaghetti water, 2-day-old spaghetti water or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
God, it kind of shows Ted's more willing to go the extra mile for others than himself.
Mm.
Yeah.
So this doesn't bother him, whereas I got to feed myself and then clean up after my... It's no, just... Quick food done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just leave a jar of peanut butter on the counter with the top open.
Stick your fingers in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's dinner. Super sanitary.
Yeah.
Well,
but, yeah.
Besides the biscuits, which is making me hungry, thinking about making them, what are some of your other favorite parts from the episode? Some of your other favorite plot points?
Let's see. What did I have? Let's check the notes.
Let's check our notes.
I guess related to that is like when this is like also like the first appearance of like the Arthur Bryant's barbecue sauce, which I have some in my fridge down the hall, which I again purely bought because of the show and I wanted to try it out. But like he asks Rebecca if there is any food that like transports her back home and makes her feel warm and fuzzy. And there's like a nice, I guess this is where it'd be like a good kind of camera cue there where like it cuts to her like looking like glancing down at the biscuits, so you like the audience gets that kind of thing, maybe something like Ted doesn't notice there. Mm-hmm. which I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, it's I think I want to say it's humanizing her a little bit more, even though obviously we know she's human and she's going through stuff, but instead of just Rebecca mean, like you see those little moments of like, oh, there's somebody there who's sad, there's hurting, there's whatever. It humanizes her. Again, like we talked about before, it's not just black and white, bad guy, good, like necessarily. There's gray.
Yeah.
Which I thought Bill Lawrence always did well in his shows. The Scrubs had Dr. Cox. He was supposed to be the villain, but he's really this worn down, mentally done doctor who's been beaten down by the system but still cares. So having Rebecca have those, like, you can kind of, at first, there's glimpses. She's like, she wants to believe, like, she doesn't understand why, like, the positivity, and you can kind of see it getting to her. But then the second anything Rupert comes up, she's like, fuck it, nope, kill him, done.
Mm-hmm.
So the trauma's there, the story, backstory is there. So why you should always have a backstory for your character. Makes them more dimensional.
Yeah. Absolutely.
She kind of becomes obsessed with like finding like where he's getting these to. Like she doesn't know that he's making them himself. And we don't until the end of the episode either. But
it kind of forgot what he was talking about. What like brings you back type deal. Like something that reminds you of your youth, essentially. Like,
yeah.
And then the second she bit into it, she was transported back immediately.
I'll take a looky there.
Oh, this do look good.
Right.
Go ahead, take a nibble. That's it. Away you go.
Fuck me. Where did you get these?
Well, I'm glad you
the second she saw them, she had that transport back. And it just got stronger when she bit into them.
It's kind of foreshadowing, but made me think of later on season three, the Gelzig, or I think it's like that's how it's pronounced, like the Netherlands, like the thing in Amsterdam where it's like it means like to be like cozy or like to feel like you're at home with that. So it's kind of like off that like same theme.
Oh, whatever. Cool. That no named yeah. guy who she ends up with
yeah
says
spoiler alert for for Boatman. Or I guess technically the Flying Dutchman, because he's a Dutchman who is a pilot, so he's a Flying Dutchman. As it were. Yeah. But
yeah, that was something. And it's that idea of if you want to get to know somebody, or if you want to find your way to somebody's heart, is through their stomach and food, right? And
yeah.
I know we're talking about food a lot, but the episode is friggin' called Biscuits, so that's fine. I think that works.
Yeah.
But I think I wrote something down. I'm looking here. It's that food can take you instantly back memories that you have. It's like no time at all. Mm-hmm. Food, smell, all of that stuff. And we already said it makes you see her have that moment. And I think part of that, she's thinking he must be buying them somewhere,
mm-hmm.
is, to me, I read that as
her thinking there's no way somebody's making them for me. There's no way that somebody would go through all this trouble to be kind to me. There's no way that men are nice.
Good point. It's a very good point, because I just thought she thought he was an incompetent boob, so there's no way he could make something that good.
Mm-hmm. That too. Yeah.
No, your point. I liked it. I did not. That is a very, very excellent point.
Because I wrote down something in here about she found it kind of off-putting, and how she said he's just nice and people are not that they necessarily respect him, but that they can be nice to him. But she thought that was weird. Like, why is he nice?
Right.
And when you're not used to that and somebody is genuinely nice, that's very off-putting, especially for somebody who's going through something very heavy and a lot of betrayal and that trauma. So that's how I read her, is her saying, like, there's no way somebody's going out of their way to make this for me. He had to have bought it, because that's easier to do. Because, I mean, you had, you know, good old Roops always buying stuff.
Yeah,
he never made anything for her.
He had money. Why waste time? Why put effort?
Doing the love bomb stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Foreshadowing.
So that was just something.
I'm doing that to a baker. You never know.
Yeah. And then after, like, this, like, was there anything else in here? Or do we want to talk about some of the stuff, like, on the pitch? Like, that happens after this too. Like with Jamie and Sam.
We can just talk about that. Why not?
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah.
We'll, I think that was going. The only time we heard Sam swear. Maybe I'm wrong. Correct me if I.
Yeah, I think maybe so too. Because, like, this technically in this, like, Tahib Jamal is like a guest star in this episode still too, and like Sam eventually becomes like one of my favorite characters on the show too. I think he's like up there as like one of like my favorite characters on the show. Yeah,
Sam's cool. Yeah,
I have, like, one of the jerseys I have from the show is a Sam jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But
can you not love him? You know,
yes, Sam's awesome.
I was, when other things started happening, I texted my friend and I was like, "Oh no, is he gonna? Please tell me he's still gonna." And she's like, "No, you're fine. Sam. You'll. It's okay." Sam's not gonna hurt you. And I was like, okay, that's all. I just needed to throw that in there. Yeah, Sam is great. I want to hug him in the note.
And like, so like, Jamie is like basically, because in this season two, Rebecca's kind of like a villain-esque, and then Jamie kind of is too, but we're also like on the show, like, everyone's not like black and white, like we've said.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all like kind of like layered shades of stuff. So like Jamie's kind of like bullying the other people on the team, which, again, like much later in the future, we can kind of see like he's like hurt people. Because like his dad did that to him, which I'm sure when we get to season three, Mike will have plenty of thoughts about Jamie's dad's arc that we see by the end of that.
He didn't need just one.
Save to season three.
You already said that he had an arc, so
yeah.
You opened Pandora's box there. You pushed that button.
Pandora's box.
Ha 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 ha.
But yeah,
I don't know what that laugh was.
It was like a Muppet laugh. And
a little bit. If I turned into a Muppet, nobody will be surprised.
I mean, Roy Kent would appreciate it. He loves the Muppets, as does Brett Goldstein. So
mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody loves the Muppets.
I mean, if it's hard you don't to
hate the Muppets,
yeah,
that's a character flaw. If you hate the Muppets, like, what did they do to you? How can you hate the Muppets? That's a good litmus test for a person. Is that a person you want in your life? If it's somebody who hates the Muppets. Maybe time to reevaluate that friendship.
I don't know.
Little Muppets.
But this is also, like, I have this later on for, like, one of my favorite quotes, but this is, like, something that became like one of like the defining, I guess, like marketable, like quotes from the show too, is the, like basically from like the scene, Ted asks, Sam, he's like, you know what the happiest animal on earth is? It's a goldfish. It has a 10-second memory. Be a goldfish.
The happiest animal on earth is? It's a goldfish. You know why?
No.
Got a 10-second memory. Be a goldfish, Sam.
So, like...
Although Mythbusters disproved that.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, the goldfish doesn't actually have a 10-second memory, but... It's the thought.
They have a 10-second lifespan.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the thought behind the saying more than the truth behind the saying, I guess.
My brother won a goldfish at like a school carnival. That thing was vicious. It killed every fish it came into contact with. Like, we got sick of taking care of it, so we gave it to the local orthodontist who had this massive fish tank. It killed all his fish.
What is it, Finding Nemo?
I don't know. And it was like, I must not have been a goldfish because it started out like that in the little bag that you get.
Was it a piranha?
No, it was not. Then it turned, like, it turned white and had like just one little gold spot. And it just got huge and it just killed every other fish in the tank with it.
Jeez. Sounds like a koi or like a betta fish.
It probably was a koi fish based on the coloration it turned, but
that's crazy.
It was just funny.
Well, don't be a koi fish.
Killed everything.
Be a goldfish. All right, what did you guys think about like the, like, because this is also kind of showing this like this other layer to Roy here too, like showing that like he is like a generally like kind person who's like sticking up for Sam and like trying to like help him out there too. So we're kind of seeing like these other.
That's why he was the captain. They further it cements that role. It's just, he's the veteran, he's the leader, he's more than his hard exterior.
I have a soft spot for characters like that, where it's like, they're tough on the outside, they're little softies inside, maybe I relate a little bit, but like, Raphael, my favorite Ninja Turtle. Roy Fael, there's a theme, I don't know, maybe, he should have been the leader, but whatever, it's fine.
Roy Fael, well, eventually, you know. But yeah,
you gotta know what a crumpet is to play cricket.
Crumpet.
But yeah, you get that Roy Jamie dynamic, and we find out in this episode that Jamie's on loan from Man City, arguably a Manchester United. I can't remember which one it is off the top of my head right now. Either way,
Man City,
arguably like the greatest football team in England, if not ever, because of all the success they have. But so you got to think, is he overcompensating because he wasn't good enough to be on that team, that he was shipped off to this lowly team, and what, because everyone was better than him? So obviously he's going to be in his head about that. And so there's just a little context that some people might not know if they don't follow or know anything about football.
Yeah.
That at this point in time, I really didn't. So I learned it from watching the show.
And then people will also want to keep in mind and keep that in the front of their head too, that he's on loan from a different team technically. Because that will come back into play.
It's that idea, especially with both Roy and Jamie, that everybody acts the way that they do. I mean, it's kind of everybody on the show and in real life. Everybody acts the way they do for reasons. Nobody's just however they are because that's it. It's usually always because of something, whether it's their personal life, whether it's their professional life. There's, you know, that's just how it is, and there's always reasons for it. And it makes for great TV and great writing when there's conflict.
Yeah.
It's the heart of drama. I had that nailed into my head in theater school. But no, I think that's that was some setting up that relationship dynamic with the two of them and like really kind of laying that out for us to see even more so, I would say.
Yeah. And then like even like the stuff like with more of the stuff with Sam in this too is that like Ted like kind of notices that Sam is depressed like with like everything that's going on there, plus with like being like homesick for Nigeria. So like he and Beard kind of deduced to like set him up with like a birthday party with the players donating money. And this is where we see one of those first of the arts and craft boxes that Nate and his niece made.
Niece make.
Mm-hmm. Which eventually, I don't remember, did we see his niece ever?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I initially thought he made that up when he's like,
well, yeah, like,
I
made it for my niece. People thought like he was making himself, but he wanted to like not make it sound like he was making them by himself. So he's like, yes, I made them with my niece. My niece.
Yeah. My niece, wink, wink.
Yeah. So I think, and I know that you had some in your notes about the Sam's birthday too, Bonnie.
Mm hmm.
Yeah.
Let me find that. Yeah, I thought that was really nice. And again, we didn't need to see as much of them playing because it was more about them versus their games. But I thought that was really sweet of like, especially with Ted noticing that and noticing that Sam was not necessarily okay. When maybe nobody else, if they noticed, they just didn't. Not that they didn't care.
You're but programmed in sports to not care about
that. Yeah. So. But it's showing it's more than just the game. Like, we're all in this together. And I really like that, yeah, Ted doesn't virtually know anything about the game, but he knows people and he knows people's hearts. And he's like, well, if I can't really do this, but I can get to people this way. And I think that's really just really cool. It's a cool approach for a character. And I really like that it was a little bit of team unity. They're not winning stuff. Yeah. They're not unifying that way by winning. Right. So why not boost morale? And why not? It's just such a dose of positivity. And it was really nice. Normal little party. That's what I put. It's like, it was really nice.
I liked, and then like the, even like the birth, like we'll see like the birthday cake later on is like basically, it's like a little like soccer football pitch on there too, which again, later on in episode two, we see Higgins like bare handing some of the cake.
Yeah, he's found his people too. Like Higgins buys into Ted so quickly.
Yeah.
That it's just funny because it adds that layer of the dynamic with him and Rebecca. Because he'd rather be with Ted than her, obviously. Although it was a funny little note in the part where Ted walks in and he's like, oh, that's a threesome I'd want to be part of or whatever. Higgins like gags.
Yeah. I think one of you had it in like one of your quotes. I don't, it's kind of jumping around, but like there was talking about like Ted and Higgins were going to have like lunch together or like salads or something.
Both
like
put I think we both put Caesar
Caesar you later.
And I like that, and like in that scene too where like Ted comes like back and
flying back,
throws the door back. He's like, yes. Yes. But because I think I remember like some behind the scenes thing too where like either Jeremy Swift or Hannah Waddingham said to me like they didn't know he was going to come back in the room like that, so like their expressions too.
It was definitely a choice that you know that they didn't rehearse.
Yeah, like their expressions to the way Ted comes back.
Caesar you later.
Yes
comes back in are actually like their real expressions. I think that's also like, I don't remember where within this episode this was too, but this is also like where he does the high five.
Bet on that. I mean, unless you want to win a buttload of money. High five, tree. Woo!
Like one of the first times that happened too. And that was also just like a random thing that Jason Sudeikis did when he was leaving, was just like high five, tree. Which I think that comes back later on in like season
two. He does it several times.
Yeah, and it's just, but it's like a sad one in that. It's just like.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that tree is pretty awesome.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's supposed to be a coat rack, right?
Yeah, I think it like the full size version of it is like supposed to be like a coat rack, and I think it's like from like IKEA or some kind of furniture place like that. But I don't know, like, because we also in this episode too, you were talking about it a little bit, was like with the match that's in this too. I think it's kind of like a cool little Easter egg there too, is that the first team like that we see them play against is Crystal Palace, which the stadium that they use for Nelson Road for AFC Richmond's stadium and pitch in the show is the real life stadium for Crystal Palace.
Amazing.
So I like how they do that, but that made me wonder, like, in the context of the world of the show, what does the stadium for Crystal Palace then look like? Does it just look a lot like AFC Richmond's?
At some point in time, most sports complex just look the same.
Yeah, but yeah. So if anybody wants to visit the Nelson Road Stadium, they can just go to the Crystal Palace Stadium in the UK and check that out. And then that's what it is. That's the real Nelson Road in real life.
My brain really wanted to have some type of metaphor about the glass houses.
Because
they were playing Crystal Palace, but I could not find a correlation other than Ted, wanting it.
Ted does make some joke about Crystal Palace.
Yeah, it's something about doesn't seem very sturdy or something. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And then Nate breaks the glass in the window.
Yeah, Palace made out of crystal seems mighty fragile to me.
Ooh. We might be onto something, guys. Hoo-hoo. I would love it if one of the writers was watching this and they're like, yeah, we put that in there and you got it.
Someone noticed.
Oh, we didn't add this to the soundbar, but the beard metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
We have to add that to the soundbar.
Oh, yeah, we do.
Reminder.
We do.
That was in episode one.
Yeah. Mike made a note too about this too, is that this episode is also like a much stronger kind of like character building for Keely too, with like what we get with Keely in here too. And one of the
her entrance in this was way better than like
solid entrance.
She has more to do in this episode too. She's not like just kind of.
Why in the last episode I felt she was thrown in because, oh shit, we got to introduce her somehow.
Yeah, which I think maybe like in retrospect they didn't necessarily need to do that, because like some characters that we haven't even like shown up yet. Yeah,
probably would have been suffice in my book, but they had the interaction with the sign, which was nice.
Yeah, but yeah, like they did. I have this nice thing in this episode too with her, with like the what would you rather be, a panda, or a lion?
Or a lion.
And what would you guys rather be, a panda or a lion?
Elephant.
It's only panda or lion.
Kung Fu Panda.
I'd probably pick panda. I understand why you'd pick a lion, but
what's panda. Black and white and red all over?
A lion, a panda who got eaten.
A panda that got mauled by a lion.
I'd want to be a Kung Fu Panda.
Yeah.
Specifically, because I love Jack Black and martial arts. If I had to pick one, didn't say I couldn't.
His
girth.
Why would I be anything else? I'm me.
That is a good line.
Yeah,
I was reminded of the Community line when you said Jack Black, because his hip flexibility and girth ratio was crazy. Did you see him do those high kicks?
I love Jack Black.
Jack Black's awesome.
Mm-hmm. That's
my. I think that I pick Panda.
But yeah.
Let's say you.
Rebecca's in that. Yeah. Mark, you're gonna say lion, aren't you?
I'd say panda too.
Oh. she's not feeling like a panda. Yeah.
Are very resilient too, because like, if anyone ever looks up like YouTube videos of just like pandas,
they're just falling like, off trees and crap.
Yeah, just like falling off crap. They can fall like 40 feet from the top of a tree, like hitting every branch on the way down. They'll just like get up on the bottom and be like, "What's up?"
Mm-hmm.
It's good. They got all all that fat padding that's like basically like a built-in like airbag.
Hey, they're just big boned, okay?
I mean,
not their fault. Their dads are noodles salesman ducks.
Yeah. Or that their biological father sold crystal meth. Bryan Cranston was the voice of Poe's biological father.
I don't remember that from the DreamWorks movie. Is that in the fourth one?
Maybe.
Possibly. To be determined next month when it comes out in theaters. From the day that we're recording this in February of 2024. But yeah,
I guess go see Kung Fu Panda. Is that what we're talking about?
Sure.
Oh, is this going to be a sponsored one? Cool.
I wish.
Call me.
Animation Fascination crossover. Here we go.
Hey.
Yeah. But yeah, like in like when people are asking like this question too, Ted asks Jamie, he's like, "What would you rather be?" He's like, "Why would I want to be?" He's like, "I'm me. Why would I want to be anything else?" And that's where I'm not sure you.
It's just, it's a great line.
Understand how psychologically healthy that actually is.
It's a great line.
Yeah. Which is weird that it also comes from Jamie, too, because he's not actually psychologically healthy.
No. But...
at least not yet.
But a broken
you don't have to be 100%. Right. Yeah, you don't have to. Exactly. That mentality is probably the best mentality to have. It's like, well, I don't want to change. I'm me.
Jamie, what would you rather be? A lion or a panda?
Coach, I'm me. Mm-hmm. Why would I want to be anything else?
I'm not sure you realize how psychologically healthy that actually is.
I'm comfortable being me, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and kind of jumping around a little bit too, but like from, like one of the, I'm just gonna put one of the other quotes that I had in here too, is that one of the things that Ted says to Jamie in this too is, Jamie, I think you might be so sure that you're one in a million that sometimes you forget that out there you're just one of 11. And then, like, coming off of that too, like later on when we see Trent Crim like kind of asking Jamie a question as he's like leaving to, I don't remember if he's going to do something with Keeley or if he was just like leaving.
He's leaving the, yeah, he's
like,
just leaving.
Yeah, during like Sam's birthday party. But he kind of gives that kind of answer, like he's like, oh, it's not just me, I'm just one of 11. But then you kind of see that there's room there for Jamie to grow slightly, but then
he's not ready yet.
Yeah, he's like immediately reverts back to, he's like, no. It's like they're just in there eating cake, dancing around like it's a party and stuff.
And that's when you see Higgins just.
Yeah, like dancing around and stuff there. Mm-hmm. But also, I guess, related to the lion and panda stuff, the whole reason that even comes up is Keeley's photo shoot. So, what do you guys think of that scene?
Well, the real reason was to give Rebecca some context in her mindset.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, she's not.
But also,
the storyline.
It also gives Rebecca reason to do something else later on in the episode too.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What did you guys think of like that whole kind of, because it's like Ted and Keeley kind of becoming closer friends there too in that scene.
This scene essentially made me think, oh, she's just the British female Ted. In a way. So that was just what I thought. It's like they're on the same wavelength on how to deal with people.
That's true.
Huh.
I also thought it was interesting.
Everyone first, that, me second type deal.
That, like, Keely is, like, afraid of Rebecca, like, in this episode, too.
Well, yeah, they're not friends yet, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was kind
of interesting. I'd probably be afraid of her.
I forgot that whole dynamic. But.
Yeah. I put something leading up to that was in the first episode, we have Rebecca kind of, throwing Ted to the wolves in the press conference. And then, not that she kind of had that, her own moment with that, but she did. And that was kind of why, like, just do it, because she was totally embarrassed. The idea of, I know we're going back a bit, but it leads up to this. Yeah, where it was that idea of taking her power back with her last name, which I was like, yes, queen, go. Like, you know, and honestly, I thought her name sounded better than his last name.
Agreed. I will just say her real last name is Waddingham. Way more Richie sounding than the two she has in this show.
Mm-hmm. You're wading through ham.
And meat is expensive.
Yeah. But ham is gross.
Depends on what type of ham.
Ham is the tea of meats.
Depends on how it's made.
It's garbage water.
If you're eating spam, yeah. Sorry, Hawaii. I know you like your spam.
No, musabi is good. Musabi is good. Ham is not good.
Depends on how you make it.
And that has been our Richmond Way Cooking Corner soapbox about ham and spam.
Ham, spam, and the man.
We'll talk more about that than biscuits so far.
Spam a lot.
Yeah, but I... Okay, question I want to pose to you guys.
Oh.
Had that not happened, had she not been totally embarrassed in front of everybody, and she still put on a... Like, she still cracked a joke, public facing. Had that not happened, do you think she would have set up that photo shoot at the end of the episode?
Oh. And all this time I thought men couldn't multitask.
I don't know, because I feel like she was still...
She may not have used it. She may have been like, no, I had a change of heart.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the reporters asking her put her in her head to search for it. And the timing of course, the coincidental timing of him calling while she's searching is... what pushed her to make the decision. But she wouldn't, I don't feel she would have been looking for it had she not known it happened again.
Yeah.
So that, I'd say that definitely pushed her to pull the trigger and run with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
That's what I thought, but I wanted to ask you guys that.
Yeah, I probably would agree with that too, because I think at least right now, like in the mindset she's in, like within the show, at least from like that first episode where we kind of think that she's kind of being kind of like taken aback a bit with Ted there in that first episode, and then like you're like, oh no, she's still like gung-ho with what she wants to do, so
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't think that has not changed one bit, but hurting Ted and for a lesser extent Keely, because she doesn't care about her in this instance, she's just fodder for the plan. That the hurt she had, that was her way of dealing with it, was I'm going to take it and apply to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then we can kind of see also that Higgins is also, like you were saying earlier too, is like already more like bought into,
he's full team left
away as it was. Yeah, like which you just said team left, so I guess that's where like all that merch comes from WB, where it says Team Lasso on it, which that's another that's another thing. So if you have a team on the show, it's AFC Richmond.
Like, but it's not called AFC Richmond, it's called Ted Lasso.
That's true. Well, maybe if they do another show, it'll be called, well, maybe Apple will end up getting in touch with us if they end up doing that, because then we might have taken the name that they would have called a follow-up show.
Hey, gotta be there first.
Yeah.
You're not first, you're last.
Well, that's not true. You could be second or third.
I was probably high when I...
Great film.
Oh, man.
It feels like Rebecca's so set, just seeing everything through pain. And how is she dealing with that? I'm going to hurt Rupert no matter what the cost. Everybody else is collateral damage. I don't care. He hurt me. Like, she's so focused on that. But you can kind of see little cracks in that.
Yeah, like, it's truly against her inner true core belief in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that already, not just having watched the show so many times. But
hurt people hurt people.
Yeah, and then like the other thing in here too, which another one of the Nate's like boxes that he made in there too was the like suggestion box. So not just the birthday one, but like also the suggestion box. Jamie puts the gum in there, but like Roy also doesn't really see like the appeal of doing that. He's like, we have such a losing record, and you think getting better snacks is gonna in the vending machines is gonna be just like, well, do you need better snacks?
Right.
And like one of the things on there is like the water pressure in the shower, and eventually like later on we see like there's a good joke there too where he's like, someone better check that shower's prostate just because of like how it's just like dribbling out like that. But like by the end of the episode you'd see like it's like
mm-hmm.
water pressure and like knocks Colin over when he turns the water on there too.
It's the little things in life. That's what Ted's all like. It's the little things that bring you up.
Yeah.
You're coming in every damn day and it's this sucks, this sucks, this sucks. Like, why would you want to play well?
If you're already like in a certain mindset of like whatever. Like little minor annoyances, things like that will be like multiplied exponentially in your head. If you were having a good day and like something like that, or like you're just like everything was going good and like that was like the only thing that was bad, like it wouldn't feel like that much of a thing to you. But like if you're already having like a crap like time all the time, and then that's also happening. It's going to, like, ratchet up how much more that, like, sucks to you.
Mm-hmm. It's like when you're having a bad day and then your coat gets caught on a doorknob and then you stub your toe and, like, the little things that normally wouldn't bug you. But when you're already having a bad day, makes it worse, exactly like you said. But it's those, and it's like what you both have said, those little things to show, I see you and I hear you and I acknowledge you. And I'm listening. You say there's a problem. Cool. But that's another, like, I think to Ted, making those biscuits is a little thing. Whereas to somebody else, that might be like, oh my God, this is the best thing anybody's ever done for me. But for him, that's just, that's what I do. It's just a little thing just to show that somebody cares or whatever. But it's those little things that add up to big things. And that's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's most of like the stuff in the episode. Did we?
Yeah.
I know there's.
I like the flow.
Yeah, I think there's some stuff that like we may have missed, like in our notes.
Well, there's always going to be some stuff. Yeah. We can always cover that now if you want to go back and read through.
Yeah.
But on the comment of the little things, I've had so many jobs where the place is broke, like they can't put money into anything. Like the one that I worked at for way too long was Movieplex with Mark.
Oh yeah,
I was like the head projectionist. I was there. I was basically work like they didn't pay overtime because they didn't want to. So I could not work for a month and I'd still have 40-hour weeks. It was just ridiculous, and I was on like some long ass shift.
So you got bounced paycheck.
That happened a lot too. Paycheck bounce. You show up, they just go open the safe and hand you money and say, go away. But like stuff was breaking, like, and you have to put band-aids to fix it together. People are downstairs yelling about something, and like I'm dealing with so much pressure, and I was so miserable. I remember something brain wrapped, and I fixed, like, I turned it off and I gave the refunds, And I went upstairs, stubbed my toe. I turn around and see Jude Law's face on an Elfie poster. And I just lost it and punched it as hard as I could. Because it was a smiling face. Well, Jude Law won because it was a cement wall. And I broke my fist.
He showed you the skeleton crew on your hand.
This is another show for you. But it's just like, but had they not been embezzling money and put money back into the place and things worked and I had proper training and proper tools, I might not have broke my hand. I might have been. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And quick aside for people that weren't ever projectionists, the brain wrap is when the film gets stuck in the projector and then the light burns through it, and then all
it's like melt.
Yeah, and then all the film gets all effed up on the platter that the film was sitting on.
And then you got to rip it out and cut it all, splice it all together.
Fun times. Most theaters probably wouldn't have that anymore because it's all digital. Most theaters, but if the theater still does have a film projector, that has the possibility of happening.
Sometimes for no reason at all, it's because it wants to.
Yeah, my story related to that, I can't really talk about because it's a place that I'm currently at.
cut here and splice in.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about most of my plot notes for me. A lot of my other and my character highlight stuff. So most of my other stuff is just going to be like in the quotes and like foreshadowing Easter eggs and the soundtrack stuff.
I mean, the one quote I liked that stood out, because Ted does it a lot, and I didn't realize there was a pattern, was Jamie's leaving, he says, cheers, and then after a beat, Ted goes, night court.
Cheers. Night court.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just, yeah, like with the Aussie guy, where he's like, wicked.
And kinky he's boots. Like,
kinky boots. But I'm sorry, too, if anybody...
Not the musical one, sorry, don't mind me.
if anyone ever replies wicked to me something now, I'll reply, like, if it's like written to, I'll just reply kinky boots. And then if they don't, and then if they're just like, wait, what? I'll be like, nothing.
Don't
better yet, just send them a picture of boots. Don't even say kinky boots.
Or just send, like, yes, on the poster for the movie. I think you talked about this, your note, Bonnie, the lesson. Like the last note you had about like the lesson for the plot, I think. Get it?
Like oh, yeah. I didn't have it in quotes because I moved it up to plot, like you just said, but I had to scroll.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like
you can be kind to others.
Mm-hmm. You can still be kind to others, and they may still take out their whatever. Emotions, personal life, whatever. Yep. You can still be kind to others and they may still treat you like garbage and it sucks. But that doesn't stop you from being kind. It's the right thing to do.
And just know, if you are the retaliator, you will be the one who gets in trouble. The person who pisses you off to where you retaliate usually never gets in trouble.
Yeah.
Just remember that.
Yeah, just don't feed the troll.
Oh, trolls.
Mm-hmm. Those are fun.
That's all they want is the attention. That's what they thrive on.
Mm-hmm.
They want the drama and the tension, and if you don't give it to them?
They'll usually wither and go away, but sometimes they won't. And then, this episode, too, Jeremy Swift also won Jeremy Swift won an Emmy for this, I believe, for this episode.
He did?
Or was nominated.
I was saying, I didn't think he won.
Yeah, Jeremy Swift submitted this episode.
He was good in this episode.
Yeah, like... nomination at the Emmys. He lost the award to Brett Goldstein.
Well.
Yeah, Brett Goldstein won that quite often for the first 2 years. Bill Dunster should have won it for season 3.
I would agree.
Because The Bear is not a comedy. That's a whole different podcast. but yeah, Mike, I think that, Mike, did you do all your plot points that you wanted to talk about?
I just mentioned this like really breaks into how Ted's ability to read people and ignore what they're saying and kind of just sit there and drill, 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 drill. is like on full display until like they essentially be firm with him and get his attention and like snap him out of it. Like you find that you get to see that, like his positivity, like Rebecca's like, I can't do this. And he just won't shut up. He just keeps going and going and going and going.
It's true.
I was actually, so I've shared this TV show with a few people now. After watching it, you know, it's just, you watch a good show and you tell people about it and then they get something different out of it. But I was talking to my mom about it and she asked me after the first two or three episodes and she said, she asked, is Ted actually that nice or is it an act?
I think it's six and one half dozen or the other, depending on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Which we will find out soon, I think, in this season, when they first go to that away game and Nate's putting that note in and out of the door.
Sorry. That scene makes me laugh.
But yeah, because the way he snaps
at him. Yeah, I was gonna, not because of the way Ted snaps at him, just because I would be Nate in that situation where I'd be like, oh shit, wait, no. Yes. No. Crap.
Because, I mean, outside of Beard, Ted doesn't have the same support system he gives other people.
Mm-hmm.
So, in most cases, those people are, it's a front.
Yeah.
And Mark's got a beard.
Yeah. Always. And a mustache. Yeah.
That was something I wanted to throw out there based on that comment of how he just has a way of, what was your note? Did you write? Mike, the ability to read people and the buttons to press and finding that in whatever that is. But yeah, that was something I wanted to bring up of like how some people are just maybe not used to what does that say about our world that we see a character who's nice like this for whatever reason but is nicer to other people than himself, whatever, but we go, is that genuine? God, I've done that with dating. Why are they nice? But that is I think a testament to the character and to the show.
That's true.
Yeah
I've definitely had the Ron Swanson answer when someone asks me something, it's like, why? Like, instead of just being like, oh, they're interested in what I'm doing. Like, why are you... You go away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what I like about this show, though.
And I think Mike said something in there, too.
Oh, man. I'm saying lots of stuff I don't remember.
No, just... I think you pointed out, or I think maybe I pointed out, this is, like, May's first episode. Oh,
I don't remember. I think we just saw her last week. But this is the first time she spoke.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Yoda of Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
Little and old.
Yeah. Tells Ted not to let people call him a wanker.
Mm-hmm. Just like, hey, don't let them call you that. Like, you're right.
He's like, what's that mean? He's like, oh. He's like, oh, thanks, because I'm a visual learner, so that helps.
Mm-hmm.
My second roommate in college got mad because I said the word wanker because his mom's full-blown British. And he's like, only I'm a... It was like his N-word.
Oh, jeez.
He was like so offended that I said it. He's like, you're not British. You can't say that. I was like, okay.
I could be a little bit.
I don't know what I am.
You're probably mostly Italian.
I don't know. According to my one crazy aunt, we're part Native American, so.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, according to 1980s ads, if you're Italian, you can play a Native American in a commercial that cries when people throw trash on the ground. So.
Everyone wants to be Italian, according to Andrew Dice Clay.
Oh, there's that.
I am, but I just don't know what percentage.
Yeah. And then, So, like, one of my favorite quotes in here, too, is, like, when we see Ted like in the opening episode. He's like, just had one piece of cereal and I'm pretty stuffed. Like the huge, like basically one huge, like
shredded wheat,
frosted wheat, not mini wheat, frosted, like huge wheat, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I think, like actual real
cereal. It was sans like frosting. It was shredded
just
wheat.
Like a, just, yeah, just like a huge biscuit thing. That I'm a lot of biscuit, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, you add hot water and it makes it all soupy, and then you eat it.
And then there's like the other thing that Rebecca says something to Ted about, like, you can't just waltz in here. He's like, what if I saw
you?
Or despite recent headlines, it's still fun to moonwalk. Which I've noticed some stuff in like between this episode and the last episode, which like are these like quick aside jokes that I didn't notice before, where like Ted also says something to Nate at one point. He's like, "Are you still just laughing at everything?" Yeah. He's like, "I'm not sure what's a joke and what's not." He's like, "Yeah, that's kind of how it is nowadays." So mm-hmm. I was like, these like little things that I didn't notice, like Ted was like commenting on at the time too. And what were your like favorite quotes, Bonnie, like from the episode?
Putting the boots on the boot, that whole thing.
I'm tired from a job where I'm putting cleats in the trunk of my car.
You got the boot, putting boots in the boot.
Thing. We're talking about the boot. Get the boot, putting the boots on the boot. I just thought it was funny. And I had said that there's so many examples, like really good examples of comedy in here. They're well written, they're well executed, but they're not going like, hey, I'm telling a joke. Waka waka, you know, I love Fozzie. But they're not doing the delivery like that. There's a lot of really good physical comedy when we see it, but the actual comedy writing is very well done. Like straight delivery with Beard is what sold that and made it good. Like just, it's just very well done. That was, I really liked that just small moment, just a little lines about that. And then the delivery is what made it funny. And that's why, like I tell people with voiceover stuff, when it's a comedy script, don't play it truthfully. Don't try to be funny, because then it's not going to be funny. And like, Brendan Hunt is so good at that, of the comedic beats and the timing and just nailing those, the delivery on those lines and making it just funny. It's just great. Just great. I already said Jamie's quote. We did the Caesar you later. I said Ted imitating the Tasmanian devil was funny.
Yeah.
It's just from the voice actor perspective, but it was some good stuff.
That was a good one. And yeah, Mike already said both of his too.
I didn't have many because you guys, I put them in there. I was like, oh, they have a lot. I don't want to double up. So
cheers, Night Court. That was me laughing about it 10 minutes later.
Night Court, now back on TV.
It is back on, well, yeah. Streaming.
Oh.
Or is it on actual TV? I don't even know.
I don't know. I just know it's now a show that exists also again. And then
which I find it because they called it the best new show on TV in a commercial, and I'm like, it's not new.
It is if you're a certain age and didn't know it existed before, I guess.
Everything old is new again.
Yeah. Twisters. The foreshadowing like and then slash Easter egg stuff that I had in there. I already talked about it, but like that huge shredded wheat. I don't remember what, I know she has a name, but the character we saw in the first episode, the girl playing soccer that Ted then plays kind of like one-on-one with in this episode too, and in the aforementioned Tasmanian Devil episode scene, which I always thought they were going to do more like with her too, like just how she was kind of like peppered in like that too. Maybe if they do, pushing like way ahead, maybe if they do end up doing like the women's AFC Richmond,
she'd be on it.
Maybe she'd be on that.
Knowing that is what like where my brain went now, but the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, he just misses his kid, and this is way of getting that interaction.
I mean, that could just be it too. I guess we get the Kenny Rogers, the gambler thing that like, again, we had that, like, aforementioned kind of stuff in Amsterdam later on in season three. I also noticed here, too, in this episode where Ted's, like, doing this with his hands at one point, like, when they're first out in the field. Well, so yeah, that's, like, another, like, another little hint of his, like, anxiety and panic attacks there, and, like, Beard notices it and, like, tells him, like, basically kind of, like, reassures him there, too. So I thought that was interesting, because I don't remember all of the, like, these, because I guess they didn't stand out as much when you don't know they're, like, they're building up to something later on. So it's cool going back now and kind of seeing how much, like, they did kind of layer that in, like, even from the pilot into, like, this episode and, like, you know, further in. And then the offsides mentioned here in this episode, the army men, the Arthur Bryant's barbecue sauce, and then the note, I kind of noticed, like, the, again, Jamie being upset by Ted and Sam discussing dads and like fathers, there was like a touchier subject for him for reasons we will eventually find out.
Little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Still didn't deserve what he got.
Yeah. Well, Jamie did, yes.
His dad.
Yeah. What did you guys have for your foreshadowing?
All I had was what I mentioned was the biscuits bringing her back to some core memory, whether it be her dad or her mom or whatever. Something obvious that I caught. It was just like something big's coming from this somehow, some way down the line. Other than that, I was like, oh, you guys got most of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, I just put Nate and his niece, and then the army men. That's the stuff that I hadn't mentioned yet.
One thing I did notice, the hooligans weren't in this episode, despite May's bar being shown full of fans for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe
they were hungover.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible.
It's true.
That does happen.
You want to talk about the soundtrack?
Yeah.
Some good stuff in this.
So you're not really
mentioned and played.
Yeah.
Well, nothing stood out to you.
Yeah. I was like, not like last week or last episode.
Mark, what about you?
Well, we had the Lizzo song playing at Keeley's photo shoot, the Juice.
Mm-hmm.
And then DJ Beardo bringing up music at Sam's birthday, the award tour by A Tribe Called Quest. And then I thought this one was funny, like, as a choice of, like, the choice of song for Slam by Onyx for Roy enjoying, like, the water.
The eater pressure?
Yeah, that was a typo. I knew what I wanted to, but yeah, the water pressure in the shower, I thought that was kind of funny, because then obviously, like, also it hits Colin and he, like, falls over, so, like, a nice little, like, physical comedy there. And then the song over the end credits, which
we both talked about that.
Yeah, the glad all over.
Mm-hmm.
Which I heard it wrong at first too, which is kind of funny too, with how it could be taken that context to it. I originally, when I typed this, wrote bad all over, which is, it's just kind of funny, because like the note that you put there for yours,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like the opposite of the vibe that Rebecca has going on at that.
Mm-hmm. So,
which hers is more of bad all over rather than the glad all over.
Mm-hmm. I mean, great song, right?
Yeah, it's a cruise. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to pick something. It was at Higgins' first concert was Boy George.
Oh, yeah. And I like how he just says it really quickly, like, first concert.
Then smirks.
Oh, Boy George.
And he's like, he smirks, and I was like, oh, that's a pretty, I'm going to think about it.
Sure.
He should go see him in Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say prison, but that's.
I was going to say he's in Moulin Rouge right now.
I thought I just know he got arrested a bunch. I didn't know he was in Moulin Rouge.
Well, now he's with those Broadway outlaws.
Yeah.
Those terrible theater kids.
You had another note about the soundtrack too, didn't you, Bonnie?
Yeah, I just said they weren't played, but I love that the BC Boys and Spice Girls were both mentioned because those are my favorites. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see the Spice Girls in concert. I never got to. When they go on their world tour reunion and they get Victoria, I'm there and I don't care how much it costs. You cannot stop me. Yeah, there is because, okay, so maybe there's not, but I didn't realize up until maybe a few years ago that essentially Spice World is the Spice Girls version of A Hard Day's Night.
More or less. I saw that movie in theaters. I saw Spice World in theaters. That's how old
I did.
Pretty sure I saw it with you.
Yeah, I just remember I saw it with my mom and my sister. So maybe it did.
I don't know. I know I watched it with you at some point in time.
My mom took me to see it, and the theater attendant who took the tickets, he went, okay, it's down that way, girl power, and it was really cute. He was this little old man, and it was the cute, like, I remember that from being, I think I was 10, and I remember that. It was like, oh, it's great. It's their version of A Hard Day's Night, and that is a hill I will die on. And I didn't realize, I was like, oh my God, it's almost the same thing. God.
Movie, yeah. Richard E. Grant was in that.
Mm-hmm. Jeez. Meatloaf was in it. Like everybody.
Hugh Laurie.
Uh huh.
This has a connection too to Lasso outside of them talking about Spice Girls, but like, yeah, Ted talked about her husband in the last episode. The guy that bent it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man.
They made him.
Are we on?
I was 11 when this movie came out. 1997.
Yep. Also, good. I do not think that musicians are always great at acting, but they knew what movie they were in.
Butterfly.
They wrote it for their skill sets. Hmm?
I said, whatever the Mariah Carey movie was, Glitter, Butterfly.
Oh, Glitter.
Oh yeah, no. We don't. I have a fundamental. Just because you can sing does not mean you can act, but they knew what movie these girls were in. They wrote it to their strengths. And it's funny. Like, they are funny. Victoria Beckham is hilarious. And I don't think people think of her as funny. She's freaking hilarious. Great. It's good stuff. Mm-hmm.
Really quick, I guess the thing we should close on is first concert, best concert for the three of us.
Before that, I want to know what the hell those microphones were, the announcers were, that they put on their, like, rest on their lip.
Oh, I don't know.
I remember seeing them the first time I watched it, be like, what is that thing?
I've never used those kind of mics when I do sports-related microphone-age.
Yeah, I know. Making up something.
In a lot of jobs I've had, when they do presentations, the people would, like, rest it right here. You put the microphone right there and talk. I'm like, you can hold it. You don't gotta. Doesn't have to touch your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to eat the mic. Anyways,
sorry. It's been bothering me since I saw it again, and I just like had to bring it up.
I think I blocked it out, so that's fair.
I'm trying to remember what my first concert was.
I know my first one.
It's probably one I didn't choose to go to.
I don't know. I remember my first one was seeing Goo Goo Dolls with you.
Oh, well.
Aw. That's fun. Mine was Backstreet Boys.
Nice. You know, it's going to be funny. You know what mine one was? Because my mom probably brought me to it.
NSYNC.
Barry Manilow. I think that's what my first concert was, Barry Manilow.
I've been to more comedy shows, but not a big concert.
See, my son can say his first concert was Styx because they were playing for free at the New York State Fair. So he brought him to that stage, and I'd be like, Patrick, you can now forever say that you're
singer.
I don't know, but that's, I feel like that's much cooler to say that your first band that you saw at a concert was Styx as compared to
depends on who you are.
You know, Barry Manilow's got a big following, so there's somebody out there that's listening to this. It's like, You know, yeah. Mark, screw you. I love Barry Manilow. Okay, so best concert. If it wasn't Barry, you can admit if it was Barry Manilow. This is a safe space.
Text conversation.
At least for me, not Mike.
Not a safe space. Nothing safe. Nothing sacred. Yeah, except the timeline.
Best concert. I don't know. Tenacious D in October of 2019. So it's like the last concert I got to go to for like 3 years because of COVID.
Oh, wow.
And I had wanted to see them for like such a long time. Granted, it was for their tour for Apocalypto. So, I mean, that album's kind of hit or miss, especially because like that concert was like that entire album and then some of like their other songs, but I don't know. I would also maybe say like a more recent Newfound Glory one that I went to this past year, because a person that Mike and I went to high school with
is a
guitar tech for them, so he got me like good, like really good freaking seats that nobody went with me, so I had three seats. So if you guys lived here, we could have all gone to see Newfound Glory. Yeah, it was Newfound Glory and All American Rejects.
We were talking about that. I saw that show when it was out here in LA.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I probably had better seats.
Well, my seats were pretty good. We had Motion City soundtrack too.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
I think I don't remember who else was there at the meeting, but yeah, that was a good concert.
Mm-hmm.
How about you guys? What was your best concert? Although you know what, Blink-182 with Mike.
That's what I was going to say.
In high school,
I haven't been to many
because
concerts.
Newfound Glory opened.
They were way better than Blink-182
at that concert. That was like what, 2001? So that was like peak era Newfound Glory, Blink-182. So that would have, yeah. And also, I found out much later that my wife was at that concert too, but I didn't like meet her obviously for a few years after that. But she was at that concert.
Wild.
So it's kind of cool.
That is cool. My best concert. So I've seen Josh Groban in concert 3 times. That's who I've seen the most, just through random circumstances. But he's also probably my favorite singer. Best concert. I mean, he's very good, don't get me wrong. But like, I essentially cried through the entirety of seeing Stevie Nicks at the Hollywood Bowl, fall of 2022. Like, just I was going through it. And she sang Landslide, and it was a beautiful October night, and it was cold, and I was just like, it was everything.
You were letting loose.
I really was. I would say that, and if we're counting, yeah, it counts. John Williams in concert at the Hollywood Bowl, too.
I was
incredible.
That's on my bucket list.
Mm-hmm.
Better make it happen.
Yeah, that would be something that needs to happen before something else happens.
He's coming back to the bowl this summer.
Oh man.
You should come to LA. He will be here.
Tell him to do it in September when I'm there for other things.
You might have to come out earlier.
Tell him not to pass away.
Okay, just because we have the same last name doesn't mean I know him. I wish I did. Well,
no, you obviously are related.
Obviously. He's my grandfather.
So it works.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
worst concert I've ever been to. Bob Dylan. That was a terrible concert because you couldn't understand him. And they turned the lights all the way off in between each song so he could either hit a joint or hit a cigarette or something. Because the lights would just come on and he'd be surrounded by smoke. And then he tried to be a comedian and it was awful. And it wasn't a good time.
And in honor of my dad for his birthday was yesterday, is that I will say Mike was there, I think, maybe. No, because this was a Britney Spears concert.
I've never seen Britney Spears in person.
And he had to leave early to go to work. and he stood up and he was facing me when he said this. So he was right in front of me and he yelled, I have a B word. And then
something followed up by stiff.
Followed up by the word Warner with the B in front of it. Cause I don't want the video to get taken up for saying, I don't know. Like if you say that word, if the, like a video gets taken,
it might.
So I'm just going to err on the side of caution, but like, yeah, my dad would do jokes like that, which at the time I was like, cool, thanks. You had to be also like right in front of me when you said that too. So everybody that you're yelling at that, but I don't know. It's funny now.
Yeah.
I didn't, 13 year old Mark did not think that was funny at all.
Yeah.
I was like, God damn. But now
we did
not
appreciate our parents' humor when we were 13. Yeah. For now, sure.
Still don't.
Yeah. Well, but yeah. So, yeah.
Well, if you're listening, tell us what your first concert and best concert are. Maybe we have some in common.
Yeah, I think Spotify lets us put in a poll so you can put that in there for this episode.
Yeah.
But if you're watching or listening to this anywhere else, sorry, you can just leave that in the comments of wherever you're watching this.
Mm-hmm. I'm more of a play classical music person anyway, so that's what I prefer. I don't like the loud concerts. I like have anxiety at them.
He's a man of distinction and taste. I prefer my classical music. Thank you.
Also, Flight of the Conchords was a good concert too, because they had Dimitri Martin open for them. So it was, I got to kill two birds with one stone by seeing a comedian that I had wanted to see and a band that I had wanted to see at the same thing. So that was awesome.
He's
a hard sell for me, Dimitri. Not saying he's not funny, just his shtick gets old for me fast.
So I was perfectly timed. It was like 20 minutes and then I went to Flight of the Conchords. So it was like, it was nice. But yeah.
All right. Well, I think I'm going to go make some biscuits.
I'll do that tomorrow since it's 11 o'clock.
Sylvie, my dog would like some biscuits of another variety.
She could probably eat Ted Lasso's biscuits.
Oh, yeah, she can. I gave her some of the ones that got stuck to the glass.
It's just flour, sugar, and butter.
Yeah. Just get stuck in her mustache. Our next episode's going to be, for the third episode, Trent Crim, The Independent, which I think is the episode that ends up getting the most people to stick around with the show if they weren't, you know, already sticking around after pilot in this episode.
Third time's the charm.
I'll say that's usually what it is. Third or fourth episode, you make your decision if you're gonna stay. Okay. Stay.
Yeah.
So anyway. Till next time. When we talk about Trent Crim Independent.
Cool. That's all I got for my closer. Cool.
Yeah.
Whistle! Scared the crap out of me. So it means it worked.
Yeah. Yeah, because Roy is always here to tell us when the episode is over. So.
Well, I'm
is
not going to.
Is his voice higher in this season? Just last question.
It's more Brett Goldstein, unless Roy can't. But everyone can find us at the Richmond Way Pod.
.com.
It's here, there, and everywhere, just like Roy Kent.
Ooh, and the Beatles.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Well, they used to be. Go find us, follow us, interact with us. We're nice.
Places.
Yeah.
On all the places. We're mostly nice.
Yeah. I think Blue Sky just opened up to a whole bunch of people. So.
The public. Anyone.
Yeah, so now you don't need an
now we're gonna leave.
To. Yeah. Not slowly become modern day Twitter. Right now, it's kind of 2006 Twitter or 2011, whatever year Twitter came around.
Whatever year, I don't use it right. So.
Yeah. But yeah, until then, go eat some biscuits and
just not without gravy.
Yeah.
And make good choices.
Believe.
Unless you don't.
Unless you don't.
All right. Bye. So until next time, folks, be curious, not judgmental, and keep rewatching. This is Ted Lasso signing off. As the man once said, the harder you work, the luckier you get.